Okay, our next speaker is actually a colleague of mine. Susan Gabbard is an agricultural economist, and she's been very involved with the National Agricultural Worker Survey. And in my job, we've worked with Susan to add questions to the NAWS to look at health. And she's going to give the next talk on effects of sending region on farm worker healthcare access and utilization.
Thank you, Tony. Great. Let me just make sure I have the high tech.
Raise the mic.
Okay, I'm not that tall. Okay. Perfect. Got the technology down. Yes, so no relationships to disclose. Great. So what I'm going to talk about today is briefly I'm going to talk about Mexican migration to jobs in U.S. agriculture. And I'm going to paint two contrasting portraits of farm workers from different Mexican sending regions, a more established sending region and a more recent sending region. And then finally, I'm going to look at healthcare indicators for these two groups, including access, utilization, and barriers for farm workers from these two regions. The National Agricultural Workers Survey is a national random survey of hired crop farm workers. It's sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor with collaboration from other federal agencies, and the agencies that generally provide health questions are NIOSH, HRSA, EPA, and Migrant and Seasonal Head Start. We've been collecting demographic and employment and health information directly from workers through face-to-face interviews for over 20 years, and we now have interviews on more than 50,000 farm workers. I'm going to skip the definitions and do them as they come up. All right, so first I'd like to talk to you a little bit about immigration or migration from Mexico to the United States. As you can see, there's a sort of a reciprocal relationship between U.S.-born workers and Mexican workers in the farm labor force, and the data is all the way from 1989, and it's in three-year intervals. So you can see that as Mexican workers go up, U.S. workers decline, and you can see that during the past 20 years, the trend has been for increasing numbers of Mexican workers, though there has been some pullback since 9/11, given the tightening of the border. And next I'm going to talk about where migrant farm workers come from within Mexico. And over time, we've seen changes in sending regions, and my colleague Ed Kassam, who will speak after me, tells me that some of the original sending regions were in that green area north near the border. But over the past 20 years, the main sending region has been the white area, which is west central Mexico, which has formed the states of Guanajuato, Jalisco, and Michoacán. But at the same time that this area has been dominant for the last 20 years, we see that there has been a rise of a new sending region, which is the Pacific South region, composed of Guerrero, Oaxaca, and Chiapas. And the number of workers from that region has tripled from 7% to 21% over the last 20 years. For the rest of my talk, I'm going to contrast the Pacific South states that we looked at, which is the more recent sending area, with the West Central Mexico, which is the more established sending region. The data comes from the last, from 2000 to 2007, interviews done with workers from these regions. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about their migrant type. One of the first things that stands out is the percent of newcomers from these regions. Newcomers means that you are both new to the United States and new to farm work. And so among the Pacific South farm workers, you see that 36% of them, or 1 in 3, is new to farm work and new to the United States. Among those from West Central Mexico, the rates are half. Only 17% were new in the year before they were interviewed. You can also see right below that the about 4 in 10 workers from the Pacific South states are what we call settled farm workers. The rest are migrants. That is, they travel either internationally or throughout the United States in search of work in the 12 months before their interview. That number is very different for those from West Central Mexico, where you see only that 6 in 10 stay in one location and 4 in 10 migrate. In terms of crossing the border, you can see that the Pacific South migrants, because they are mostly newcomers, but still 45% of them crossed an international border in the year before they their interviews. That is, they came to the United States either as a reciprocal migrant or as a first-time migrant, whereas only 1 in 3 of the farm workers from West Central Mexico made an international trip. If you look at the average time that they that migrants from these regions have been in the United States, you'll see that migrants from West Central Mexico, they have 12 years on average experience in the United States and 5 years for those from the Pacific South. So definitely a more recent sending network. About the accompanied means whether they're accompanied by their families at their work sites where they are in the United States. You can see that more people from West Central Mexico are able to have their families with them than those from the Pacific South. And if you look at the bottom line on the slide, you'll see a big difference in legal authorization to work in the United States, where 9 out of 10 people from the Pacific South, those farm workers, do not have legal authorization, compared to 6 in 10 from West Central Mexico. They've been here longer. They have more people to sponsor them. The people from West Central Mexico, 35% are either citizens, green card holders, or have some form of work authorization. In terms of the demographics, both groups are about 80% male. The average age of those in the Pacific South is younger, which corresponds to their being newer to farm work. Their median highest grade completed is 6th grade for both groups. A big difference is the ethnic composition of these two migrant streams. The Pacific South area, they have 53% of the workers are indigenous. They've either identified themselves through answers to some sort of language or race question on the survey as belonging to an indigenous group, compared to 7% for West Central Mexico. And in terms of family composition, again, you see the effect of the more established network where there are more families, more married, more parents in the West Central Mexico group, and there are more single people in the Pacific South. In terms of the kinds of farm work that they do, you'll see that they're fairly similar except for a higher concentration of farm workers from the Pacific South in vegetables, and a little bit higher concentration of those in West Central Mexico in more of the skilled and technical farm jobs. In terms of the amount of time that they spend in farm work, people from West Central Mexico spend on average 4 more weeks per year in farm work, and that's 4 more weeks per year in the labor force in the United States earning as well. And the hourly wages, or the hourly equivalent wages if they're piece rate workers, for workers from West Central Mexico, are 60 cents per hour more than those from the Pacific South. Again, they've been here longer. They're in somewhat better jobs. And you can see this reflected in the income and poverty statistics, where individuals from West Central Mexico have higher individual incomes and higher household incomes, because remember, they're more likely to have their families with them, and then lower rates of poverty, where about 26% of those, or a quarter of those from West Central Mexico, are in poverty, and nearly half of those from the Pacific South have households that are in poverty. And that's poverty means that we've adjusted also for income for the size of the household. Now, in terms of what this means for health indicators, we're asking very new migrants or immigrants to the United States about concepts such as workers' compensation and employer-provided health insurance. So we ask these questions, we actually literally describe the programs, and you'll see that employer health coverage for injured or sick due to work is workers' compensation, but that also means formal workers' compensation, or they know the foreman will take them to the doctor, or the grower will take them to the doctor and pay for them if they are injured at work. Perfect. Oh, I'm right on time. Okay, great. So one of the most striking things about, payments while recuperating is, do they have workers' comp? Will they get payments if they are laid off, even if they are off the job because they're injured? And employer health coverage is for if they are injured or sick, not due to work. That's how we explain it. One of the interesting things is you can see a lot of people say they don't know. which is that these are still very foreign concepts to them when we're interviewing them. And you can see again that those from West Central Mexico who've been here longer or maybe have household members who are more familiar with these concepts have lower rates of saying that they don't know. But for those who do know, if you say yes to these questions, it's pretty clear that you understand the concept and you are receiving this. So you can see that whereas 3/4 of people from West Central Mexico feel that if they got injured or sick on the job, their health expenses would be covered, only about half of those from the Pacific South. Similarly, more people from West Central think that they will have payments if they are unable to work due to a work injury or illness. In terms of employer health coverage, I try to move the cursor down here. The rates are very, very low, very low. 10% of farm workers from West Central have employer-provided health insurance, and 3% of those from the Pacific South. In terms of health insurance from all sources, you can see that, both farm workers and spouses in households from West Central Mexico are more likely to have health insurance than those from the Pacific South. The rates are still low, but they're about double those from the really new sending regions. Children tend to have slightly higher insurance rates because a lot of them are citizens and they qualify for SCHIP or other kinds of government benefits, but still more children from households with farm workers from West Central Mexico have health insurance. If you look at the bottom of the slide, we talk about who pays for health insurance, and this is for those that have health insurance. And so even though we saw the very low percentage of people who had employer-sponsored health insurance, that accounts for more than half of the insurance that farm workers do have. So employer-sponsored health insurance is very important. Government health insurance, government programs, Medicaid, other local programs constitute about a third of those in the Pacific South and a quarter of those in West Central. And again, this is 35% of 9% and 27% of 22%. So it's likely that actually more people from West Central are covered by these programs. If you look at healthcare utilization, oftentimes when we feel very somewhat comforted, we say, well, if they're not going to the doctor here, they must be going to the doctor in their home country. And it's actually not true. If you look, we ask people parallel questions about where they went to the provider, and you'll see that no provider visits. Almost half of people from the South had no provider visit on any side of the border. About 30% of people from the Pacific South used U.S. healthcare. About 43% of those from West Central did. So more from the West Central. If you look at where they went from healthcare, what I find interesting is down here you'll see, if you look at community health centers, ERs, and migrant health clinics, the places that you expect that these people would find healthcare, you see that about equal percents are from both streams are here. What you're not finding is you're not finding people from the Pacific South going to private doctors and other kinds of providers. In terms of payment, what you're looking at, you're seeing again, public clinic, no charge, same percent of people from both streams. Employer health plans, a little less for the Pacific South, but pretty much the same. You're seeing is other, which is combinations of payments, and farm worker paid visits are much lower for those from the Pacific South. So they haven't really penetrated the private healthcare system in the U.S. In terms of when you ask people about barriers for care, what I find really interesting is people from West Central say that it's too expensive is a greater barrier, even though they have higher income. This is because people who've actually been to the doctor in the United States are more likely to choose that healthcare a barrier is that it's too expensive, and more people from the Pacific South are imagining that it's too expensive, but more people from West Central actually know it's too expensive. Again, as you would expect, the language issue, given the large number of indigenous people for whom Spanish is a second language, there's more barriers in terms of they don't speak my language and not knowing where the services are. Okay, so in summary, what you can see is we look at a more established sending region and a more recent sending region. You can see that as workers and their networks become stronger in the United States, they are more likely to get the better jobs, to access health care and services. So interestingly enough, we can't say that while it's true that the migrant clinics, the ERs, and the community health centers could reach out more to these populations, there's clearly a growth industry. What's interesting is that it is an inability to get the insurance and to use the private health networks that really separates these two networks in terms of their access to health care and health care utilization in the United States. Okay. That's
it. Thank you. We could take one or two questions. Susan, there's one question.
Oh, sure. I have a question about the indigenous population.
Yeah.
The survey is done in Spanish,
or it's sometimes done in an indigenous language. But most of the people who are in farm work in the United States have sort of getting around Spanish, and a lot of the questions that we ask them are the basic questions about do you have, how many kids do you have? How much do you get paid at work? How many hours per week? So, and they have generally some education, some primary education in Spanish in Mexico. But when they're, but when translation is needed, then we get a translator.
And how did you explain the difference between a community health
and a migrant clinic? Well, pretty much the migrant clinics have done a really good job of advertising themselves, and people who go to migrant clinics know that it's a migrant clinic. The community health centers we usually explain them as a public clinic, and our interviewers are allowed to sort of go off script and explain, and they have explanations for people for how to make these fairly foreign concepts more clear.
Yeah. One more.
Well, a couple. You'll see, one is that migrant health clinics, and the way HRSA now funds migrant and community health, sometimes it's not clear whether you're getting migrant or community health. They kind of blur the lines between both of them. And in some areas there, a lot of farm workers are in areas where there aren't migrant clinics. Migrant clinics have good penetration in fairly established migrant areas and areas where there's a lot of farm workers, but they also use a voucher system that's more difficult for people to perceive as migrant health in states where there's low concentrations of migrants. And I'm going to ask them next month at their meetings. I'm taking the same slide to their meetings next month. You know, there's a PhD student who's starting to work on this data in our office under HRSA sponsorship next spring, so I'm hoping that she'll answer this question.
Do you want me to hold this to the end?
Do you mind waiting till the end?
I hate it when the last speaker doesn't get enough time. So let me introduce our last speaker. Dr. Ed Kassam has worked for 20 years doing farm worker research. He's been on the Commission on Agricultural Workers for the Department of Labor. I believe he has a doctorate in the philosophy of science. Is that right?
Comparative
literature. He didn't want to tell me that, I guess. Anyway, he is also a collaborator with Dr. Gabbard. Let me get your